You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Hello and welcome back to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by the 90 Min Football Network. As ever, I'm your host, Harry Simeon. And on this Artur Melo special, I am joined by an Italian football expert, a Juventus expert, but most importantly, a really good friend. Welcome to the show, Carlo Garganese. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, thanks for that introduction, Harry. I'm doing good. Yeah, how are you doing? Happy New Year to all your listeners and to you.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year to you too as well, man. And I guess from an Arsenal perspective, we're in this weird place at the minute because we watched that performance yesterday against Liverpool where we were very resilient, very strong, very good defensively. But of course, there are big problems at the football club, especially in the midfield area. And the reason I wanted to speak to you today, Carlo, apart from wanting to speak to you because you're a top lad, is because you are the guy when it comes to Italian football and when it comes to Juventus. And of course, as you know, Arsenal are being heavily linked with a loan move that would see Artur Melo come from Juventus to Arsenal until the end of the season. So for those of you in the live chat box, for those of you listening to this on playback, to bring you up to speed with what we know is going on at the moment. And this has come from a variety of outlets. Arsenal are in talks with Juventus over a loan deal. However, it's not clear if it's going to be a loan deal with an obligation to purchase the player at the end of it, if it's going to be just a straight up loan deal, or if Juventus are even going to allow this to happen without bringing in a replacement. Carlo, you're a Juve guy. So what do you make of this situation first? And how do you read the situation with regards to Melo and a potential move to Arsenal?
Well, going into January, Juventus' transfer situation was pretty simple. They, as everyone will know, Juventus are having a disastrous season, like historically bad. They've been seventh or eighth for pretty much the whole season. They've made it up to fifth now. They're struggling. They've been struggling badly all season to get into the Champions League places. It's going to be difficult for them to finish in the top four, I think. And so they knew that they needed to do something in the January transfer market. The objective was to sign a forward and a midfielder, a central midfielder, because the forward line's been terrible. It's until their last game against Roma, which they won 4-3 with an XG of like 1.5. They had the lowest number of goals in the top half of Serie A. Yeah, I think you had to go down to 13th to find a team that had scored less goals. So that's how bad their attack has been. Midfield has been bad, has been their weak spot for going back about 4 or 5 years now, since Pogba, Pirlo, Vidal, which was an incredible midfield, maybe the best midfield in Europe. Since they all left in between 2015 and 2016, they've needed to strengthen the midfield, and they've never really done it. So they went into January. That was their objective. The problem is Juventus are broke. They've got no money. They've just had a 400 million capital injection from their parent company, Exor, to cover the debts. And they can only do business in January by selling some players, by cutting costs. They had the highest wage bill in Serie A history. Last season. So they needed to get players off the books, to sell players. Now, in midfield, they have a number of players that they want to get rid of. Aaron Ramsey, obviously former Arsenal player, is top of the list. They want him out. He's on like about €7.5 million a year. Adrian Rabiot is another possibility. He's on around about the same kind of money. Weston McKennie is another possibility. The problem is, Juventus are struggling to sell players, including those. There just isn't really a market. Ramsey, you know, he doesn't want to leave unless he gets exactly the same wage and at a decent club. So it's come down to Artur Melo, who is also available. Basically, every single Juventus midfielder is available for sale if the right offer comes in, with the exception of Manuel Locatelli. That's pretty much where we've been. Mm-hmm. So coming to Artur Melo, eventually, he he's available. He is available. Again, if the right offer comes in. But the issue with Arthur Melo is that they signed him for something like 72 million plus 10 million in add-ons in a very controversial, dodgy deal, if I can say, a year and a half ago from Barcelona. And so his the amortized value on his amortized value is still very, very high, really high. I mean, I'm without doing the maths, probably around about 60 million, I would say. So that basically means that if Juventus were going to sell him, they would need to make that, sell him for that amount of money just to not make a capital loss on the books. So it's difficult. It's difficult for them. So I think a loan deal is till the end of the season is probably the most likely. From Arthur's point of view, he wants to move. His new agent, Federico Pastorello, he's trying to find him a move as well. I think he would definitely accept the move to Arsenal. But from Juventus's point of view, they do need to find a replacement before they can get rid of him. But there will be no problem from Juventus' side from getting rid of him, also because Max Allegri just doesn't fancy him.
So tell us a little bit about the player and his style, because and obviously I watch a lot of Italian football, as you know, but my knowledge on it and my, you know, the depth of my knowledge is nowhere near as deep as yours. If I was to compare him to a Premier League player, for example, and I appreciate that there are not many players of that ilk in the Premier League, I would say he's a bit like a Jorginho because of the fact that he likes to dictate from a deeper position, but isn't necessarily this big physical defensive midfielder that we've become almost accustomed to in the Premier League. Would you say that's a fair comparison? And tell us a little bit about the style of the player.
Yeah. From the Premier League, I would say so. When he moved to Barcelona from Gremio, I think we'd be looking at about 2018, I think he moved there. He was pretty much immediately labelled as the new Xavi. Xavi 2.0 is what they called him in Barcelona. In fact, Xavi himself actually said he reminded him of himself, and he's the nearest thing he's ever seen to anybody. In terms of style, obviously, I'm not saying he's as good as Xavi. Clearly, I mean, the guy's one of the great all-time greats. But in terms of style, that is kind of what you're looking at. You know, he plays lots of very short passes. His short passing game is outstanding. Little kind of six-yard passes, little one-twos, little triangles, keeping the ball, keeping possession. Kind of the tiki-taka kind of game. I mean, tiki-taka is his style of play. He's incredibly press resistant. Like, I would probably put him in the top five, even with everything that's happened in the last 2 years, just in terms of he receives the ball from his defenders, he's pressed, or he's got a bunch of players charging at him, he needs to get out of a tight spot. He's incredible at getting out of tight spots. He does that. If everyone remembers Xavi, the way that he played, he used to do that little kind of pirouette, little turn, where he would kind of do a little circle on the ball. He does that. That's one of his signature moves. He does that a lot. He's really, really press resistant. Those, I would say, are his strengths. Very good close ball control, dribbling, very calm on the ball. So, yeah, Jorginho, a little bit, I would say. In terms of weaknesses, I mean, he's somebody who, he doesn't score many goals, doesn't get many assists. He's not going to have that kind of output. Like at Juventus, he's had one goal and no assists in the 18 months he's been there. But he has been played as the deepest line when he has played, which was very little this season. He has played as the deepest line midfielder in as the number six, and basically just almost just outside his box. So he rarely gets into the opposition third. So you kind of wouldn't expect him. Maybe could do a few more vertical passes. I wouldn't say he's the strongest defensively. He's not the strongest physically, a bit like Jorginho. I would say, like Jorginho, he's pretty quick, like 1 to 5 meters. Like, he's got speed of thought and he can, but he's not going to cover the ground. He's not going to be up and down, you know. And in the Premier League, that would be one doubt, I would say, in the Premier League. But I think the key is, and I wrote a feature about this the other day, is you need to play him in the right type of team for him to succeed. And that hasn't happened at Juventus, not under Max Allegri this season. Juventus, to put it blunt, they don't play football. They're just, you know, Allegri likes his midfielders to be kind of defensive, tough, run a lot, no nonsense. You know, he doesn't like people, you know, messing about with it, doing kind of like little triangles and little passes, and you know, there's no patterns of play. You know, so he was just never suited to Allegri's style of play. At Arsenal, though, I think there is the chance that they can play the style of game that will suit him, because we know from Arteta that, you know, he wants to try and play out from the back. He wants to try and break the press. He takes risks, you know, even in their own penalty area, he tries to encourage that. So, you know, in that way, I think that will suit him more. But obviously, you know, he's had a long time now where all his time at Juventus, where his career has not only stagnated, it's gone backwards.
Is the kind of general consensus in Italy now then that it is more a case of him not fitting Allegri's style, like you say, as opposed to it being a lack of ability or a lack of quality? Is it very much that it's just the wrong sort of shape peg trying to be rammed into the wrong shape hole and it's just not working?
I mean, I don't know if there's a general consensus, but I think there are some people that think that. There are some people that believe in his ability. Like, I put out a tweet the other day, which got a lot of interest from Arsenal fans, obviously, but also that generated quite a lot of debate, where I basically said what I said to you now. You know, in the right system, I think he could become a top player. But, you know, that hasn't happened at Juventus because they haven't played football. They haven't played his kind of game. And you know, there were some people that agreed with me, but there are some people that kind of point out to the kind of, you know, as a footballer, sometimes maybe you need to be more adaptable and more flexible tactically. Mm-hmm. Not be such a specialist that you can only play in one style of game. And, you know, I guess in some senses, and I'm his biggest fan, you could probably say the same thing about Jorginho. You know, Jorginho works for Chelsea, works for Italy's Roberto Mancini, because Roberto Mancini plays... I mean, put it this way, if you put Arthur Melo in Roberto Mancini's Italy, you know, the way that those three in the midfield with Verratti, they play beautiful little passing football like they did in the Euros, I think he would be perfect. He'd be fantastic. But you put him into, you know, a team that's more... Like, you put me into an Antonio Conte team or Jose Mourinho team or you know, those kind of teams, then, you know, or counter-attacking teams, then yeah, it's not for him. So, yeah, I think it's kind of divided. I mean, some have been critical with his attitude off the pitch. He has got into a bit of trouble, even at Barcelona, you know, lateness, not turning up. And
we're used to that, don't worry. Our captain does it.
We'll be friends with Aubameyang, I think. Yeah.
No, good stuff. I mean, so it sounds like from what you're saying that he's a really kind of a really talented footballer who just hasn't really found his calling at Juventus. But going back to the kind of nature of this potential deal, the loan with an obligation or loan with an option to buy is a really common thing in Italy, isn't it? And just tell our listeners a little bit about how that's kind of, I think, off the back of the pandemic, become a lot more common. Whereas here in the Premier League, that's still a little bit like of a culture shock when you hear stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it has been going on even before the pandemic. I mean, a loan with an option to buy is obviously, you know, you loan the player for 6 months or a season, and then at the end of the season, you've got the option. The club that's, you know, that loaned the player got the option, they can make it permanent for a set fee. An obligation to buy is really you have no choice. You loan the player. Often that is done to for accounting reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, like Juventus bought Federico Chiesa on loan, 2-year loan, with a 60 million like obligation to pay fee at the end, purely because they couldn't afford him and they didn't have the money.
Delaying it and kicking the
can down and also spreading it out over the books and you know, all that kind of stuff. So a lot of the time that is why they do it. Obviously the Premier League type teams don't have that trouble with the finances like, well, pretty much every other league in Europe does. I think the final fee with Arthur, if it is a loan with an obligation or an option, I think to become permanent, I think that could be a bit of a sticking point, you know, because I don't know, would Arsenal, I haven't done the maths, but I'm thinking, considering it was kind of like 82 million, when you amortize that down, I think your listeners, everyone watching will understand what an amortized value is. Basically, if you buy a player for 100 million, you give them a 5-year contract, it will go down on 20 million for each year on the books. So at the end of the first year, that player's amortized value will be 80 million because it'll be 20 million. After 2 years, it will be down to 60 million. So if you divide, you know, 72 million by, I can't even remember how many years they gave him a contract. Let's say 4 years. Arthur had a 4-year contract at Juventus. Divide that by four, you know, you're looking at, I failed maths at school, but you're looking at,
yeah, me too.
You know, take 20 million off, let's say, you know, you're looking at over 50 million. You're looking at his value. So would Arsenal pay 50 million for a player, for Arthur, you know, given what we've seen of him in the last 18 months? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they've got the money. You know, so I guess that's the sticking point. I think it might end up being with an option to buy. That's what I think. Mm. But, you know, let's see what happens.
It's really interesting, though, isn't it? Because obviously that is kind of like, that would be what Juventus want and how Juventus see it as the club that obviously made that initial outlay on the player. But there must come a point where you go, well, actually, this might be the value that we see, Matt, but we're not going to get that. So we have to compromise somewhere. And is there a chance that because of the financial situation of Juventus that Arsenal, in not committing to a fee, you know, ahead of time, could then be in a position like we were with Martin Odegaard, in a sense, where Real Madrid were saying, nope, we want 50 million, we want this, we want that. And then we got to the window. Real Madrid very quickly realized that there was nobody else interested and that there were no other suitors. And then they kind of had to compromise and almost meet Arsenal halfway. Is there a chance that that happens further down the line?
It's not impossible. It's not impossible because, you know, like I said, Juventus do have financial problems and they're going to have even bigger financial problems if they don't qualify for the Champions League, which I think, and I didn't mention this before, the fact that Federico Chiesa got an ACL injury means that they're even more desperate kind of now to kind of do business, but also makes their chances of getting the top four, because he is their best player, to you know, makes it even more difficult. So if they don't get in there, then they're going to be desperate, even more desperate. They're going to have to make some sacrifices and sell off some players, try and make some money back even more so. You know, Arthur Melo is one of the players that, you know, they could make some money back on. But again, you know, they're going to lose money. Do they might have to take a loss. They took a loss with Ronaldo. You know, Ronaldo's amortized value on his books was something like 25, 30 million. And Man United ended up paying not even 20, I think, in the end. So they did take a loss on that because it got to a few days before the end of the window. Ronaldo was demanding to leave and basically saying, I'm not going to play anymore. And they were like, well, what do we do? Do we keep an unhappy player? Do we, you know, or do we just sell him and just make back what we can make back? You know, so it could happen. It could happen. Also, once the player, if the player moves to Arsenal, does well, is happy there, wants to move back like Odegaard, you know, the players will counts for a lot in modern football as well. So absolutely, yeah, there is the chance that they could negotiate it down.
Yeah, no, good stuff. Just before I let you go, Carlo, it would be, I know this is an Arturo Melo special, but it would be wrong of me not to ask you just briefly for your thoughts on Dusan Vlahovic, another player being heavily linked with a move to Arsenal. I think for me, from my perspective, from what I'm reading, from what I'm seeing, from what I'm hearing, it feels like this is very much a deal that if we want to get it done, we're probably going to have to do it in the summer. But what's your take on the player? Is he the real deal? Because I feel like here in the UK, and I don't mean this in a way where I'm almost discrediting people, but I think a lot of people that I've spoken to who are really big on the idea of Vlahovic coming to Arsenal don't actually watch much Serie A and have watched a couple of compilations and a few videos and are sort of keeping up to date with what he's doing now because we're linked. But you obviously see him a lot more than your average Premier League football fan. What's your take on the player and how far can this guy go?
I do think he's a fantastic player. I mean, the numbers speak for itself in terms of last year. I mean, he's top scoring Serie A this season, but in the calendar year of 2021, he scored 33 league goals. Only Robert Lewandowski in Europe's top, I think Europe's top 10 leagues scored more goals. So that's, I mean, he scored more than Messi, Ronaldo, even Haaland. You know, he outscored all of them. Okay. Yeah. It's Serie A. It's not the Premier League. But, you know, but it's still, that is still, you know, hugely impressive. He's a great finisher. Physically, he's a beast. So there's no concerns about him not coping physically with the Premier League. No doubts about that. The guy is, he's an animal. He's absolutely huge. And he's 21. So the guy is only going to You know, can you imagine him in a few years' time when he's, when he becomes a man? You know, so he's, yeah, he's fantastic from that point of view. Is he on the level of Haaland, Mbappe? I'm not sure. And the reason why, he could develop. The reason why is, I think when I look at Haaland, when I look at Mbappe, I see players that can make things happen for themselves, you know, out of nothing. With Vlahovic, he can do that, but I don't think he can do it anywhere near to the extent. Like, I don't see him picking up the ball, you know, 30 yards out, beating three men, or, you know, just making things happen for himself. I think he does. I'm not saying he does need this. I mean, he does need service, but he is reliant also a little bit on his teammates, which I guess everybody is. But, you know, you can only do it if your teammates around you are good as well. But, you know, I'm not sure if he's ever going to be a Ballon d'Or winner, put it that way. That doesn't mean he can't still be an absolutely top class, even world-class player. He has the potential to be. I'm just saying that I don't see him on that level. You know, I always think that to be a truly elite player, you need to be able to do that yourself. But who knows? You know, who knows? Yeah. I mean, depends how he develops, doesn't it? I mean, look at, like, say, let's take someone like Robert Lewandowski. I'm sure, you know, at 21, what was he doing at 21? You know, at his age level, I mean, it's unbelievable what he's doing at his age. So it all depends on how he develops. But I mean, if Arsenal sign him, you can't deny it would be an incredible sign. Also, because, I mean, how many top number nines are there in coming through? I mean, all the best ones, you can say probably about 80% of the best number nine strikers in the world, they're all in their 30s, all of them. You've got Haaland, you've got Vlahovic coming up. Who else is there that you would go out and say, yeah, I'm going to buy him and I'm pretty confident he's going to be good enough for a top team to score, to be our number nine? There ain't anyone that you would bet on. So yeah, the only question mark is, I mean, the money being banded about is crazy. It's crazy money. Not just the transfer fee, but, like, I think his agents they're a bit trouble. They're troublemakers. His entourage are asking for stupid money, like signing on fee, commission, massive wages. They're really trying to get as much out for themselves as well. I would say that. But I do think that he himself has a clear vision in his mind. He wants to join a top team. He only wants to join a team that's in the Champions League next season. So I don't think he will make a decision. I think he will stay this month. I've thought that from the start. And I think he will make his decision April time when he sees who's April, May, when he sees who's going to be in the Champions League.
Yeah, makes sense. Carlo, just before I let you go, mate, because the chat box are demanding it, and I know you're really pushed for time, but Matthias Svanberg of Bologna, is he a player that you think could make that transition across to the Premier League? Because he's also someone that Arsenal have been linked with.
He's been one of the most improved players this season. You could even go as far to say one of the breakout players of this season. He's a good player. He's I don't know if he's ready for a club as big as Arsenal, let's say, right now, but he is developing nicely. I would say that for someone like Svanberg, he's probably better off moving to a club in between before moving to Arsenal, I think. And I think Arsenal have better players, or players that are ready now, but he would fit into the kind of, you know, what Arsenal are trying to do with young, talented players. I mean, he's technical, he's tall, you know, he's complete, you know, he's a very good player. You know, we actually, at the Italian Football Podcast, we know his agent well. His agent is Martin Dahlin, who's the former Sweden striker, one of the top goal scorers in the 94 World Cup. That's his agent. And, you know, we speak to Dahlin quite a lot. And I should be careful what I say, but there has been some frustration over how Sinisa Mihailovic has used him. And the other youngsters, because Bologna have a lot of kind of talented youngsters like Svanberg, and the feeling is that he hasn't always developed them. And I do get the feeling that this summer, maybe Svanberg might be looking to move on to a club that can
take him to that next step.
But he's one to watch out for sure.
Brilliant stuff. Great insight as always. Carlo, before I let you go, mate, just let everybody know how they can follow you and how they can find the Italian Football Podcast. It is literally the go-to Italian football podcast. So
thanks, man.
Make sure you check it out. Go ahead, mate.
Yeah, well, my Twitter handle is at Carlo Garganese, I think. the Italian Football Podcast handle, I'm just looking at it on my phone, is at ITA foot pod, all in one. We should have come up with a better handle than that. to subscribe to our podcast, you can go on patreon.com/TIFP, and it's $2.99 a month, and you get a minimum of two shows a week. One is a review episode where we review the week's action or the weekend's action. And one is an interview with a top Calcio figure, someone from the world of Calcio. It could be a player, an ex-player, a manager, a journalist, an agent, you know, all those kind of things. We've had some really, really good guests on. Like last month, we had Giuseppe Rossi, the former Man United, and still playing, actually, an Italy striker. And we had Gerard Deulofeu, who obviously former Everton, playing for Udinese now. And so we've got some good guests on.
Yeah, you've had Sven-Goran Eriksson on there as well. You had some great guests on there.
Yeah, we've had Sven on twice, and he destroyed Gary Neville when he came on, which was always good. He called him a professional moaner. Yeah, Sven's a good lad. He's a good lad.
He's a laugh. He's a good lad indeed. I'd like to go on a night out with Sven, I'm not going to lie.
Brilliant. Oh, yeah. He likes his, be careful what I say. Yeah. He likes his ladies. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a real ladies man. Carlo, thank you so much, mate. And really, really appreciate your time. Guys, make sure you check out Carlo's podcast. Make sure you find him on Twitter as well. I'll link those in the description. There's over 300 of you watching us live right now on YouTube, which means there's no reason why we shouldn't have at least 100 likes on the board. So smash that like button between now and the outro play. And if you're listening on the audio, please do leave us a review. We'll be back tomorrow with a look ahead to the North London Derby, if indeed it goes ahead. On that one, we'll be talking about Mikel Arteta's selection headaches and all the rest of it surrounding what's going to be a huge game, again, if it takes place. We'll be back very, very soon. Until next time, take care. Thank you.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Iguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.